In our ACT Rochester 2020 report on race and ethnicity, it was reported that African Americans in the 9-county Rochester region are more likely to be in poverty, their children are more likely to be in poverty, are more likely to experience unemployment, have lower incomes, are less likely to own a home, pay a higher percent of income for rent, and own homes of a lower value. These statistics have a history connected to them. And so this week, when I was on a Zoom call with my reparations committee, I was asked to comment on why the history of harm tied to African Americans in Rochester should require that reparations be focused on the Black and Brown community. And so I did. I listed the fact that this land that is now called Rochester was bought from wages generated from Black slave labor from the South. How Black slaves were used to clear the swamps and the forestry to make Rochester more habitable. The intentional legally supported policies that discriminated against children of color, forcing them to attend the colored-only school when white children had access to public schools and private schools until Frederick Douglass forced integration. Discriminatory housing covenants that kept Black and Brown folks out of housing options based on their race. The children of color harmed in poor neighborhoods through policies that ignored the impact of lead paint. Families of color disproportionately impacted by the war on drug policies that overwhelmingly targeted those in Black and Brown communities. Welfare policies that were in place when I was a kid that required Black fathers not be allowed to live in the house with their children if the families who were struggling needed assistance, and much more. So in my response to my comment, one of the committee members replied, "I appreciate your perspective, Dr. Myra." And for a second, I found myself enjoying the elevation in title. But then, I quickly demoted myself, and I said, "I am not a doctor." And at that, he began to fumble a little bit, and he said, "I'm sorry, Miss Myra Brown, or whatever your title is." In Mark's gospel today, Jesus offers a critique to the crowd about his religious leaders, the scribes, for enjoying the elevation that they were getting by their assumed status of wearing long robes, receiving respectful greetings, having seats of honor in synagogues and banquets. In that moment of being given the elevation of doctor, I understood the luring that status can be. Who doesn't want to feel special, honored, or important? We all do. In fact, we are all special to God. We are special. Yesterday, we gave First Communion to a special little girl in our parish, Eloise Turkowski. And it wasn't just a special day for her, but we were celebrating with her her special connection that she had with God in taking her First Communion. The problem that Jesus saw was that the lives that these religious leaders were leading weren't as honorable as the status that they were enjoying. Why? Because, Jesus said, they were not doing the most honorable thing that one can do in their position, and that is to care for the poor. Jesus said they do all of that but devour the houses of widows by doing pretextual prayers. They were spiritualizing poverty instead of addressing it. It was one of the few times that Jesus condemns a practice right out. Was it because they were bad people? Probably not. What is probably more true is that they may have been uncomfortable addressing the issue of poverty. Maybe they felt overwhelmed by it, as we sometimes do. But as we look around our world, we know that they are not alone. We too find difficulty in addressing the issues of poverty around us. Sister Grace Miller continues to call on our city to address the issue of poverty among the street homeless that she often takes in. In fact, I had a conversation this week with a representative from the county to support her call for creating a housing czar position in the county to eliminating sanctions against the homeless that keeps them homeless, to provide unrestricted funds for housing options and to find new ways of support for recertification for housing options, and find new ways of housing options so that their benefits won't be cut off. Now, these seem like really simple things to do, and yet they seem so difficult for the systems that we have in place. So here's Jesus' challenge. But his challenge isn't just to religious leaders, but he's extending it to the crowds that he is talking to. It is them that he offers a beware. Make sure that you don't follow this example of leaving the poor to be devoured. My grandmother once told me of a time when she was married to her first husband who was a pastor in the South. And back then, poor black Christian people didn't have much money and they didn't go to church every Sunday. They went to church about once a month. And the other Sundays, the pastor would travel from house to house to visit the parishioners. And the expectation was that they would contribute to him by giving him food or preparing a meal when he came. Well, this particular Sunday, he asked my grandmother to go with him. And so she told me that she noticed that every house that they went to was extremely poor. And as they were being given food and they were feeding her husband, she noticed that many of the children in the houses had cupboards that were almost bare. And in some cases, they were empty. And so she said when she got to the car with her husband alone, she turned to him and she said, "I'm not going with you anymore to these houses. These people don't have anything. They have all these children and we're taking food literally out of the mouths of babes. God is not pleased and I won't do it anymore," she said. And then she said, he turned to her and he said, "Then get out." And my grandmother told me that she did get out of the car that day and she never went back. Then she turned to me and she said, "I walked 10 miles home that day, and baby, it was the best 10 miles I ever walked." My grandmother was our first conscientious objector. She critiqued a religious practice that didn't match her spiritual or actual principles of care for the poor. And that is what Jesus calls us to in this gospel today. It's a very challenging message. He then turns to the treasury system. He's not participating in it. He's observing how the system is working as he watches those who come to place their money in the treasury. The very treasury that is supposed to take care of poor people like this widow that Jesus notices. He observes that rich people are giving in it. Are they contributing their fair share? We don't know that. But what we know is that Jesus says that they are giving out of their abundance. And he notices that this poor widow, in putting her last two coins, has given more than all the contributors. These two coins that she had to rub together. The widow that we encounter today in Mark's gospel provides a case study in poverty and oppression. Unable to confront poverty, oftentimes in the church, we turn her into something safer. An example of simple generosity. We like to preach and focus on the fact that she gave everything she had, and we should give all that we have to God. But that isn't all that is here in this passage. The point is that Jesus doesn't allow his listeners to forget about the poor. He doesn't want us to forget. At one level, it was impossible to. Nearly everyone in the ancient world lived in poverty, often dire poverty. Jesus' world included maybe a few wildly wealthy people, a few people finding ways to make money and accumulate wealth. But there were lots more people scratching a living off the land, lots of people living on the margins of the economy. And Jesus, in the Gospels, he tells us and shows us that he was committed to moving among the poor. He told stories about them, about rich landowners and their poor and enslaved laborers. He warned the rich of the consequences of oppressing and ignoring the poor, while he demonstrated compassion by feeding the masses who followed him out into the wilderness. Jesus doesn't allow us to turn our eyes from poverty. He keeps it in front of his audience, the livelihood that this woman is stuck in. He creates a crisis of choosing action or inaction. The scribes chose inaction, but he wants this crowd and us to choose differently. This week, Reverend Seeley tagged along with Barb Simmons, one of our parishioners, who sets aside a day every week to go around to the city's outdoor free food cupboards to stock them. She collects food from parishioners here and friends to make sure that the poor have food to eat. Barbara and many of you parishioners are doing something about poverty. When we think about our church budget and where we prioritize our spending, it's with the poor and the vulnerable. The work that's happening in our outreaches, our missions, our children's programs, programs helping poor and struggling families, walk-ins, refugees, caregivers, those are our priorities. You see, the value of a society is always determined by how it treats its most vulnerable. Yesterday, I attended a school district meeting where the community was being invited to come and develop community solutions for children in our school district, of whom over 80% are living below the poverty line. We were asked to provide solutions to address those levels of poverty and the impact of the pandemic, their social emotional health, and the violence that they're experiencing. There was an overwhelming sense of generosity of time and attention being given that came from this larger community to support our children and our educators. And today, this afternoon, our youth ministers, Mark Potter and Lauren Arzetta Fry, will be taking our teens to Catholic Family Center to put together blessing bags for the refugee families who have relocated here from Afghanistan with little and next to nothing. Doing something about poverty. In our own parish, even our children are giving what they can to address it. They are leading the way for us. For her service project, Eloise Turkowski, in preparation for her first communion, read this statement. "I heard on the news," she said, "that this winter is going to be one of the coldest in a while. It made me feel worried for all the homeless adults and children in Rochester. I thought I could raise money to buy a bunch of warm socks to donate to a shelter by our church. My mom and I called Open Door Mission and asked what sizes they needed the most. They told us that they don't get a lot of kids' socks in. Then I wrote all of my family and friends and I told them about my plan. I asked them for any bottles and cans that they have, and I raised $285. And I shopped online in stores for as many kid socks as I could and delivered them to the shelter. I hope this helps keep more feet warm this winter." So there's always something that we can do to end the experience of poverty. The widow's generosity places the reality of poverty before our eyes. It reminds us that the poor challenges us to do more, to think about how we drain society of its resources and leave so little for them. This story reminds us that we live in an economy that siphons its resources upward instead of downward and leaves the vulnerable to face devastation on their own. So this gospel is a call to arms for the church and the world. It's a challenging message in the gospel today, calling on us to think about what we do, what we need to do to reorganize our world to address poverty. Jesus tells us in this gospel that the first step is to notice who we are expecting to give more than they can afford to give. How might we reorganize and right fit our world for all? The widow, she gave all she had to the treasury in this gospel. So perhaps the deeper question is, are we as a society willing to give all that we have for the poor?